know, think about detectives being right across the street from the courthouse instead of a half an hour drive away.
The former Anchorage Legislative Building will now house the Anchorage Police Department. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, June 5th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, too few students means the school in the village of Larson Bay may be shutting down.
It's tough. You know, this is home. Our whole life is changing.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Each semester, undergraduate students at UAA are learning through hands-on research experiences that take them outside the classroom. Working alongside faculty and professionals in the field, students have used their research to begin exciting careers, to secure patents for their inventions, and to earn national academic accolades. Amazing stories are being written every day at UAA. More at uaa.alaska.edu/admissions. This message sponsored by UAA.
The Legislative Budget and Audit Committee released the findings of a special audit of the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority this afternoon. The trust manages money for programs that help people with mental illnesses, developmental disabilities, and other cognitive problems. The audit found that the Board of Trustees violated a number of state statutes. Reporter Ann Hillman is here to tell us a little about what it says. Hi, Ann.
Hi.
So, Ann, what was the major reason for conducting the audit in the first place?
So, about 7 years ago, the Board of Trustees, started investing money in commercial real estate and buying buildings around the state and around the country. And people who originally set up the trust in a settlement back in the 1990s were like, ooh, is that really how, like, should they be allowed to spend the money in that way?
And what did they find? What did the audit find?
The audit found that in doing this, in buying this commercial real estate, they had violated multiple state statutes. Because the statutes after the settlement say that the principal of this trust is supposed to be invested by the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. And in part, that was put into place because they didn't want history to repeat itself. They didn't want this money that was set aside for individuals with mental illness to be squandered again. So statutes say it needs to be invested by the permanent fund. The board was withholding all of the principal for about 10 years, not handing it over to the permanent fund and buying real estate themselves. And the idea behind this was to bring in more money to spend on programs for people with mental illnesses. And they did manage to bring in a lot more income. But it, again, goes against state statute. And there's a couple other statutes that the audit found was being violated as well.
So perhaps altruistic idea, but still was not legal under state statute. What does the trust plan to do to remedy this situation?
Well, the trust disagrees with that finding and feels that there's a lot of legal gray area that actually allows them to do this and do their investing on their own. So they're going to be coming up with this with the solution, working with the permanent fund, but also potentially working on new legislation that would change how they can do investments into the future. The other major thing that the audit found was that there was a lot of violations of the Open Meetings Act and just the board not being open with public and intentionally withholding information from the public and intentionally withholding information from each other. And so they are working to remedy those situations as well.
All right. Thanks, Anne, for that report. We'll bring you more details on this audit at alaskapublic.org and tomorrow on Alaska News Nightly. The controversial former Legislative Information Office in downtown Anchorage will have a new tenant, the Anchorage Police Department. The LIO moved out of the location after an expensive and opulent renovation was extensively criticized. The building has been vacant for 2 years. But now the Anchorage Community Development Authority is buying the building and will lease it to the police department. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early reports.
716 West 4th Avenue in Anchorage has been mired in controversy since it was renovated to become the Anchorage LIO. the expensive renovation was criticized, and following a lawsuit, lawmakers opted for a different location. The building has been vacant for 2 years. The Anchorage Community Development Authority announced its plans to buy the building last month, and they've announced their new building tenants will be the Anchorage Police Department. Anchorage Police Chief Justin Dahl says that the building will house APD's headquarters, which is currently on Elmore Drive. That means most of the department will be downtown now, including most detectives, some dispatch workers, the crime suppression unit, and administration. He says the proximity to downtown allows for more efficiencies in the department.
You know, think about detectives being right across the street from the courthouse instead of a half an hour drive away. And so if you need to run to the courthouse to appear in court or apply for a search warrant, you add an hour onto however long that's going to take to drive down there and back. And now, you know, it's a 30-second walk across the street.
Dahl says since the mid-2000s, APD has been trying to find more areas to house evidence, seized property, and various other items. Additionally, the police department has almost doubled in size since the 1980s, when the department moved from its original downtown Anchorage location.
These are great problems to have. We have a whole lot of staff, and we have them out, you know, collecting police reports and collecting evidence, and so we need space to store that stuff. So, I mean, that's not a bad problem to have any part of that. It's also can be a difficult problem to solve and a very expensive problem to solve, you know, when you start looking at building new facilities to house all of that.
Dahl says that rather than buy a storage facility for an estimated $40 million, leasing the former LIO building and using the old Elmore building for a bulk of the department's storage was a more fiscally sound plan. He said the department will lease the new building for about $1.5 million a year. Even though the LIO building was designed specifically with the idea of housing the legislature, Dahl says moving in doesn't require many changes.
It's actually surprisingly easy. It's a very unusual layout. I think it would be difficult for another entity to be in there. But for us, the first time I walked through it, I realized it's going to require almost no modification. We're basically going to be able to move right in.
Andrew Halcrow is the director of the Anchorage Community Development Authority. He says that initially the state was going to pay $32 million for the LIO building. The ACDA will pay $14 million. Halcrow says that ACDA owning the property does more for the city than if the state did.
If the legislators were to buy that building as they proposed 2 years ago, there would have been zero paid to the city. They would have just basically had a tax-free building, not contributed anything for services because state properties are exempt from property taxes. With ACDA buying the building, you still have that property tax revenue churn. You still have fees on gross revenue.
As far as benefits to citizens, Anchorage Mayor Ethan Berkowitz says that the new location will help keep Anchorage safe and revitalize downtown Anchorage, making it more appealing for other businesses. He says it isn't uncommon for major cities to have police headquarters downtown.
There's a reason why most police headquarters are in the downtowns of their cities. It's close to where their partner agencies operate. It's close to the courthouses, and it is close to the center of activity in a community. And as we restore the police department to downtown Anchorage, we're going to make sure that those benefits also happen for Anchorage as well.
Berkowitz also added that simply having an increased police presence in a major area of Anchorage will make the area safer. Halcrow says the purchase of the former LIO building should be finalized by early August, and Chief Dahl wants to get the department moved in by late summer or early fall. In Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
Anchorage police are questioning a suspect in the hit-and-run death of a man on a sidewalk. Officers shortly before noon today made an arrest of people inside a stolen sport utility vehicle at 12th Avenue and Cordova Street. As other officers drove to the scene, they saw another SUV driving recklessly south on Cordova Street. Police say the second SUV drove onto the sidewalk between 9th and 10th Avenues, struck the pedestrian, and continued past the officers investigating the stolen vehicle. Police stopped the second SUV. A female driver and female passenger were taken into custody for questioning. No arrests were immediately made in the pedestrian death. There were 19 new wildfires detected across the state yesterday. Most of the new blazes are lightning starts in remote areas, including 11 of the 93-million-acre Galena Zone, which stretches from the western interior to the Arctic Slope. Among five fires being fought is a 2,000-acre tundra grass fire on the North Slope. The Alaska Fire Service reports there are several cabins and native land allotments in the area of the Tusikpak Lake fire east of the village of Point Hope. Another fire getting attention is burning 40 miles northeast of Talkeetna. The Alaska Division of Forestry reports that ground crews and air tankers were deployed on the 32-acre prairie fire to protect an area threatening a hunting lodge and cabins. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a canoe landing in Douglas kicks off celebration in Southeast.
Long ago, when the canoes were coming onto the land, they came with their oars and sang, chanted.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Matson, committed to the communities it serves, building on more than 50 years of service to the communities of Alaska. Learn more at matson.com.
Longtime Alaska State Representative Les Guerra says he won't seek re-election this year, becoming the latest lawmaker to announce retirement plans. At least nine House members, including Guerra, aren't seeking re-election or are running for state Senate. In the Senate, at least four members aren't running again. One of them, Senator Kevin Meyer, is running instead for lieutenant governor. Les Guerra, an Anchorage Democrat, was first elected to the House in 2002. A spokeswoman for the Alaska Department of Law says the department will review and respond accordingly to a discrimination complaint filed by a transgender state legislative librarian. Department spokeswoman Corey Mills says the state had yet to be served with the complaint. On Tuesday, Jennifer Fletcher, a transgender woman, sued the state, saying she was denied coverage for medically necessary surgical treatment. The federal lawsuit says the state health insurance plan excludes coverage for surgical treatment for gender dysphoria. The lawsuit states that because the only people who require medically necessary care to treat gender dysphoria are transgender, denying coverage for such health care discriminates against transgender people. The lawsuit seeks an unspecified amount in damages. As a number of commercial salmon fisheries around the state kick off this week, the outlook for ex-vessel prices is looking good. Fishing economists say between lower run forecasts and strong foreign and domestic demand, commercial fishermen will likely see higher prices this year. But that doesn't necessarily mean commercial fishermen will earn more this season compared to last year. KBBI's Aaron Bolton explains.
Andy Wink with Wink Research and Consulting says although prices vary by species and region, most commercial salmon fisheries should see stable or higher prices this year.
For pinks, going into an even year, we're expecting a smaller harvest. So just by virtue of less supply, we should see pricing be pretty strong there. However, Russia is looking at probably having a very large pink harvest, so that could offset our lower forecast a little bit.
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game expects the commercial fleet statewide to harvest 72 million fewer pinks this year. Pink runs typically decline on even years, and returns across the state in 2016, the season's parent year, were also declared a federal disaster. Fish and Game is also forecasting smaller chum runs across the state. Wink says smaller chum harvest in other parts of the Pacific will also likely bode well for prices on the docks in Alaska.
Japan's typically the world's largest chum salmon producer, but they've been dealing with lower and lower harvests in recent years. And so that's really, created a lot better market conditions for Alaska chum salmon.
Wink says prices for secondary products such as chum roe or eggs are also benefiting from limited supply. He adds high prices for farmed salmon will help boost prices for Alaskan hatchery and wild fish as well. And Wink explains that a weaker U.S. dollar should increase exports into countries like China.
Now, whether that'll actually add up to more total dollars at the end of the day, that's harder to say because, like I say, we're looking at probably a much lower pink harvest. And last year was a record high chum harvest, so it's going to be tough to do better than that this year.
If early runs in Prince William Sound are any indicator, things may be off to a worse start than expected. Fish and Game shuttered three openings in the Copper River commercial gillnet fishery due to abysmal sockeye harvests. Max Metviv is a commercial gill netter in Prince William Sound. He said most of the fleet that participates in the Copper River fishery has shifted its attention to hatchery chum salmon.
I'm sure more than 75% of the fleet, since the Copper's closed, started focusing here towards the Sound and trying to get some chum, but that's also a little late, seems like.
Metviv says prices for sockeye and chum are higher than last year, but he says so far it's not enough to make up for lackluster runs.
You know, it's just early in the season. You never know if our runs are lagging behind or not, but we're definitely still optimistic about it.
Fish and Game expects the Copper River to fall below the forecasted harvest of about 950,000 sockeye. So far, gill netters have harvested only 28,000 sockeye in Prince William Sound. Salmon forecasts statewide are down across the board from 2017. Chum harvests are expected to decline by about 4 million fish, and sockeye forecasts are down along with pink salmon. Wink said there's no denying early harvest numbers are putting the industry behind last year's harvest, but like Medvedev, he says it's still early.
People are wringing their hands about Copper River, and sometimes it takes Fish and Game data a while to come in and populate. You know, we might not be as far behind as it looks, but we're definitely pretty far behind. There's no question about that in terms of the pace. Hopefully they're just showing up late, or maybe it's a regional issue. We'll see over the next month.
A number of commercial salmon fisheries in South Central and Western Alaska kick off this week, and the bulk of the state's fisheries will be underway later this month. Reporting in Homer, I'm Aaron Bolton.
The University of Alaska Fairbanks will lead an investigation of heavy oil extraction on the North Slope. The U.S. Department of Energy announced $7 million in funding for the project last week as DOE research laboratory representatives gathered in Fairbanks for National Lab Day events. DOE Science Undersecretary Paul DeBar says the project follows agency-backed extraction research that led to the recent year's lower 48 oil and gas production boom.
And what we want to try to do is to try to help the innovation here in Alaska for unique Alaska geography and geology.
I think the future is heavy oil or viscous oil.
UAF Petroleum Engineering Department Chair Abhijit Dandekar says the DOE project will explore a technique that could enable extraction of thick crude locked in frozen North Slope oil fields.
We have some challenges such as permafrost, so we cannot really deploy some of the typical techniques that are used, such as, you know, heat to reduce the viscosity. So this particular funding is focused on injecting polymer.
Dandekar says the project is important because an estimated 25 to 30 billion barrels of heavy oil are locked in North Slope fields. The polymer injection technique will be tested at the Milne Point field. Four other universities are involved in the UAF project, which will be managed by the National Energy Technology Laboratory.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing and exploring on the North Slope and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources. Opioids are sometimes prescribed for pain. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Never share your opioids with family, friends, or anyone at all. It may cause addiction, trouble with the law, overdose, and death. Always securely store your opioids away from children and others who may misuse them. Learn more about opioid safety at opioids.alaska.gov. This message brought to you by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
A long-awaited project to revamp the Sterling Highway near Cooper Landing got its final stamp of approval last Thursday. The Cooper Landing bypass is the culmination of efforts to improve the Sterling Highway going back decades. There have been upgrades over the years to other sections of the highway, which links the communities of Soldotna, Kenai, and Homer to the rest of the state highway system. But a section of the Sterling from milepost 45 to 60 still has tight curves and no shoulders, among other problems exacerbated by summertime traffic congestion. At the Alaska Department of Transportation's Anchorage headquarters, officials with the Federal Highway Administration signed a record of decision that says the highway will be rerouted north of Cooper Landing on what's known as the Juneau Creek Alternative. The plan calls for more than a dozen miles of new construction in a right-of-way through Chugach National Forest and a corner of the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge. It also includes long stretches with passing lanes, several underpasses for wildlife, ATV, and foot traffic, including an underpass for hikers on Resurrection Pass Trail, and Alaska's first overpass designed for animals. DOT says it expects no impacts to designated wilderness because the highway's right-of-way will be part of a planned land exchange with the Interior Department. The project is expected to cost about $300 million, with construction beginning as soon as 2020. DOT says federal money will account for 90% of the necessary funds. The population of Larsen Bay has been decreasing for decades, and now it looks like the village could see its only school close for the first time in its history because of a lack of students. Many residents agree it has to do with the right to fish for salmon. KMXT's Mitch Borden visited Larsen Bay for the last day of school and has this report.
Holding bright yellow bags, students from Larsen Bay School run down the village's dirt roads looking for trash. It's the last day of school before summer break, and they're spending it doing a spring cleanup.
But I can't wait till this summer.
No more school!
As the kids scramble around outside, it's quiet back at the school, and there's a good chance it'll stay that way for the foreseeable future, because most likely, it won't have enough students to open in the fall.
I was sad that I was the last one, but I'm happy I'm graduating so I could move on to a different chapter.
Gail Aga was the only person to graduate high school this year in Larsen Bay, and could be the last, which made her graduation a big event.
Everyone knew that I was going to be the last one till whenever, and a lot of people showed up, and even people I didn't even know.
So, well, this is the gym. We just had graduation, you know, it was awesome.
Walking through the building, Alice Aga, an aide at the school, reflects on how Larsen Bay used to be known for its sports teams. But now it's ending the year with less than 10 students.
Here's the trophy case. Like, the 80s was the highlight of Larsen Bay school, that is. They were like basketball, volleyball, wrestling, you know, everything.
Until recently, Aga was the community's mayor and sat on its tribal council. But now she's stepping down from those positions because she's leaving.
Well, you know, if there's no school here, Mitch, I can't stay. I can't play the waiting game, you know, like, I can't homeschool my kids. That's a whole full-time job, and I just can't do that. You know, I have to make a living.
In Alaska, schools need at least 10 students to receive around $300,000 in state funding, which Larsen Bay School needs to open. Right now, the school only has 2 kids officially enrolled for next year, which is why Aga is moving to Kodiak and enrolling her kids there.
I think I'm still in denial about the whole thing right now. I'll probably break down, you know, once I get to Kodiak. It's tough, you know, this is home. Our whole life is changing.
Even though Larsen Bay School isn't officially closed yet, people around the community are doing the math and know it's a long shot that they'll have enough kids to open the school, which many see as another sign the community is shrinking.
The young people move away in this. Old people are dying.
Jack Wick has lived in Larsen Bay for decades and remembers when there were plenty of people living there and the main profession was commercial fishing. But he says that began to change in the 1970s.
Everybody fished. Even if you were a crewman, you knew you could work your way up to be a skipper. So after limited entry, a lot of them realized they wouldn't be able to get a boat.
Alaska introduced limited entry permits in 1975, which is a policy that restricts the amount of people who can commercially fish for salmon and other fish. At its peak, only around 10 Larsen Bay residents had permits to run boats, but now it's down to less than half that because people left the village, sold their permits, or their permits were canceled. In the Kodiak region, the price of a salmon permit can range anywhere between a few thousand to over $100,000. That price tag can make it hard for people to get into commercial fishing, which is why Wick and others in Larsen Bay believe this policy is partially to blame for Larsen Bay going from having around 200 people in the 80s to about 60 full-time residents today.
The people in Larsen Bay and other villages didn't have the money to compete and buy equipment to get into those fisheries, so They just start getting into other things, going to school, becoming something else other than fishermen.
The exodus of youth from Larsen Bay is causing some to worry the community is becoming a retirement village, and that eventually people will only come out in the summer to fish or vacation at local hunting lodges.
Doreen Johnson, Mike Carlson, Leslie Johnson.
The walls of Larsen Bay School are lined with the names of past students.
Nathan DeRowan, Tyson Theriault.
These names follow you around the building as a reminder of all the people who've also walked its halls.
Gladys, Charlie Aga, Joe Reft, Serenity Chai.
That sense of history isn't lost on Gail Aga as she thinks about the school's future.
I just never think it would close or anything. Because, I don't know, just didn't think it'd be real.
That prospect is real, though. But Aga may not be around to see how the school closure will affect Larsen Bay in the long run. Like so many before her, Aga's planning to leave the village and head to college in the coming year. Reporting from Larsen Bay, I'm Mitch Borden.
Canoes finished their week-long journey this afternoon to Juneau. The landing is the unofficial beginning of celebration. The festival, held every 2 years, is a days-long honoring of Southeast Alaska Native culture. KTOO's Trip Krause watched as the canoes were welcomed by hundreds gathered at the Douglas Boat Harbor.
We're at the Douglas Boat Harbor, anticipating the arrival of the One People Canoe Society.
Hi, I'm Craig Jackson from Ketchikan, Alaska. My grandpa does this every year. He's a veteran in Vietnam, and it's actually crazy because he posted a picture this morning. And he says, 60 years later, I'm still in a canoe, because he actually has a picture of him in a canoe looking for mines in Vietnam.
The group of canoes have traveled from Ketchikan, Sitka, Cake, Angoon, Huna, Yakutat, and even Canada. They'll finish their week-long journey with the landing, the unofficial beginning of celebration. The festival, held every 2 years, is a days-long festival of Southeast Alaska Native culture. Clan leaders will give permission for the canoes to land and then welcome those arriving by water at the boat ramp.
My name is Chukunki Kla. I'm from the Eagles. Long ago, when the canoes were coming onto the land, they came with their oars and sang, chanted, and the chief leaders came to the shore, and when they got to the shore close, their oars went up, and the chiefs at the shore said, Yekeha Yugudi, welcome. Lucky Kaselik, let's dance on the land.
Celebration has happened every other year since 1982. This year's theme is Respect, Weigh Your Words. About 5,000 participants and 2,000 dancers will take part in celebration this year. In Douglas, I'm Trip J. Krause.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org/news. We had reports tonight from Ann Hillman and Casey Grove in Anchorage, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Aaron Bolton in Homer, Mitch Borden in Larsen Bay, and Trip Krause in Douglas. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Matson, committed to the communities it serves, building on more than 50 years of service to the communities of Alaska. Learn more at matson.com. And by Alaska Heart and Vascular Institute, committing to improving the lives of Alaskans. Using a team approach, Alaska Heart and Vascular Institute offers a range of cardiovascular diagnoses and care. Learn more at alaskaheart.com. ACPE's Education Loan Refinance can save you money and give you just one bill for all your private, state, and federal loans. The Alaska Refinance Loan offers Alaska residents a 4.95% interest rate with no fees. You choose between a 5, 10, or 15-year plan. Go to acpe.alaska.gov/radio or call 1-800-441-2962. This message sponsored by Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.